final piece to the 250 class dream for our family. I might just be a big TikTok fest. If that's the case, I'm out. I'm bouncing.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 10 of Title 24, presented by NBC Sports. I'm Ricky Carmichael. We've got Ryan Villopoto as well. We've got a special guest coming up a little later in the show, 250 East Coast Supercross champ Hunter Lawrence. Pretty good interview. Can't wait to talk to him. But nevertheless, man, we got to thank our sponsors, United Motorsports, Boxo Tools, and of course, Quadlock, best phone cases in the business. So make sure you check them out, and we're thankful that you're enjoying the ride with us. But nevertheless, man, RV, let's step right into it. Little Nashville breakdown. I think the biggest thing for me, and I'm sure for you, is the track, how tough it was.
Yeah, man, it was. I definitely wouldn't have not wanted to be racing that track. It looked like it was really hard pack, really rough, even from the start. It didn't get – I mean, when the first practices, first time qualifying, like you could see – it was looked like there was little speed bumps everywhere on the track. It looked like traction wasn't great. The transitions of the jumps were, it kick you a really funny. The motorcycle would get kicked really funny a lot of the times. So a crucial track, I think, and just made it to where speed was a factor. Obviously, everybody's trying to go as fast as I can, but survival, it seemed like, definitely in the 450 450 race. Was making clean laps without, going down. We've seen some pretty gnarly crashes.
You know what's crazy to me is, like, when I was watching that race, and I don't know exactly why, but it seemed like the lappers, like they were just put in a position where they couldn't get out of the way. And I'm not blaming them. I'm just like, I'm watching them, like they're going to be a crucial point later on in this race because they couldn't move out of the way. If they tried to move out of the way, they were in the way.
To be honest, when I turned the TV on, I was like, wow, the floor looks small. The track looked tight. We got to talk about the first turn, which is a right-hand first turn also, which is not typical for us. You got to get off the rear brake way sooner than if it was a left-hand turn. So I've been in a situation with a right-hand first turn and didn't make the main in Jacksonville, sheerly because it was a right-hand first turn. So really critical here, right into a big rhythm section. But to me, yeah, it just looked like a small floor. The track was tight. The way they built the track too, there really wasn't anything to really separate. Everybody did exactly the same. And then also with that elevated off camber turn where it was pretty much 90% of the guys were going roll or double and then inside on the high line, just made it really hard for lappers to get out of the way when the leaders were coming through.
That the dragon back too, dude. That thing was so gnarly. I mean, you touched on it. I think just with the track conditions, when they're hard, and then you got a dragon back that is hard. I mean, it was just. And I don't know that there's anything that the dirt works could do. I mean, those guys bust their tails every single weekend, and maybe it's because we were racing through the daytime that the moisture wasn't staying in. I don't know. That track, I can tell you this much, but I'm sure I can speak for you. I am glad I don't race on days like that.
Exactly. And actually watching it kind of reminded me of not how ruddy it got, but how rough it was. Like the feedback, you could see it. There's a lot of feedback through the body. Was a lot like Dallas, new Dallas, not the old Dallas they had a little bit better dirt, but the current stadium that they race in now, I can remember going there and it was like literally riding on asphalt. And it was just, you could, the feedback through the motorcycle, because the suspension's so stiff already, was tremendous. So that's what it looked like out there. It was a tough situation. We didn't have any major battles or anything, but I think there's still a lot to talk about with the track. Obviously Barcia going down, chaos with Cooper and things like that.
Yeah. Cooper, I mean, he was going for it right there at the heat race. And then we're watching some sound, right, or some tape, and it's the incident of Cooper Webb. And he just goes around that corner. And if you watch, and I don't know, I'd love to hear what you had to say. And I feel so bad for AC, because just wrong place, wrong time. Clearly that wasn't intentional. No one would ever want to do that. But I don't know if Cooper leans the bike over too much, and you see, or was he giving too much room for Eli? Was he reacting to Eli What do you think when you see it in Super?
Yeah, you know, I got back to track being tight. That was a tight 90 back onto, 180 back onto the start straight. It looked like right there he was set up to get into that rut coming back on the start straight, but maybe was anticipating Eli coming up like he did. And if Coop wouldn't have kind of blew the line, I feel like they would have probably had a little bit of contact, nothing to have conversation over, but definitely would have been very close. But as the berm fell off too, it didn't look like it looked like it was chunky. The track was chunky. So as soon as he rolled off the berm, lost the front wheel right on the ground. Yeah. And then AC
right here, like we're watching a replay.
Yeah, watching the replay right here over the berm. And then right here, his front wheel drops off and then just hits those cobbles and then just goes down. The berm faded away probably quicker than he was anticipating. And right behind that was AC.
Oh, we gotta look back. Watch Eli Tomac. Watch when he comes down the straightaway. He looks back, but watch his head gesture. Okay, roll the tape. We're rolling the tape, and we're going to watch. People said that he looked back, but watch what he starts doing after he looks back. Okay, watch. And then watch right here. Look at his head. Yeah. He's like shaking his head. Yes, I didn't see that on the replay in the broadcast booth this weekend. Dude.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now that you bring that up, we're going to have to maybe do a little more digging into that. Not that that was anything. Like I said, Eli was coming in there. It wasn't really going for contact. In my opinion, you know, those 180s coming back on the start straight, it, no matter what, when you're really close like that, it's going to be a close call if you're going to touch each other coming back on the start straight.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Like I can't believe what I just saw there. Now, obviously, to Eli's credit, he doesn't want to see anyone get hurt. He is probably more like, you got me in that right-hander before the dragon back, and then now you got a little karma by going down. Obviously, he didn't know at the time it was that severe. So, but dude,
yeah,
you know how it is though. At this time of the in the championship, it's do or die.
Yeah, definitely, it's a very critical moment for both of them. Points are still really, really close, and I will say that coming into Nashville, I think that Eli had the upper hand at this point. And then obviously with a situation like that, you know, it's showing that Coop's going to be out for the rest of this Supercross season. You know, we've seen that, heard that, read that. You know, total bummer on his point. We're just glad that he's, you know, any position like that, you know, it's we crashing is part of our industry, a part of our sport. But when we see a guy get hit in a weird spot, weird position like that, back of the head, you know, those are always scary moments for us, the fans, you know, to, you know, hoping that, you know, everything's going to be just fine. Luckily he is just fine. A little bit of, like I said, concussion, you know, but we will be missing him for the last three, which is a bummer.
Yeah. Adam Santarulo, that guy is, he's pretty, dude, he's a great kid. I really like him. I don't think he has a bad bone in his body. He even tried to come up to Cooper Webb. We're watching Cooper Webb. That's his dad there that he's hugging. He's down there before he gets taken off to a local hospital for further evaluation, where he ended up spending the night. But Adam Santarulo, he said that he didn't want to ride or finish the heat race. And he, like I said, he approached Cooper after to apologize. Have you ever been in that position where you've collided with someone and they went down and they hurt themselves? And
not like that. No. I can reference Jacksonville, right-hand start, didn't make the main event that night, but ended up, I think, landing on Matt Bonney. And he ended up being okay, but I ended up, actually smacking my head really hard and tore a little piece of, something in my eye to where I had a little bit of, still today have a little bit of a blind spot. So, you know, I guess it happened to me, you know, collecting with somebody on the first turn, but knock on wood, I was pretty lucky. I know this wasn't a first turn incident, but it was within the first lap. So, it's chaos those first laps, and like I mentioned before, to me the track looked very tight. I don't know if that floor is small at Nashville, but it is what it is. Everybody's got to ride it, and it was tough track conditions this last weekend.
Yeah, and I want to be again crystal clear on the move and the replays that we've been watching. with when Cooper went down, and you see Eli looking back, and you almost see like a nod, like he's like, yeah, yeah. And for sure, you know, that just has to be like he went down. Obviously, he's not shaking his head because he knew that he was hurt. So just for full clarity and transparency, I don't think Eli is certainly not that type of guy, not that type of competitor. And he was probably just like, ah, karma, you got me on the one corner, and then you went down. So and you just have to think it, any competitor at this level never wants to win that way. I think you'd want to win heads up. So full transparency, mm-hmm. and I just want to be crystal clear there. Justin Barsha, that was a gnarly crash, dude. The worst. I mean, there you go. Oh,
yeah, it was. We'll have to watch the replay. It looks seems like maybe the front didn't clip the. You know, he didn't get the front wheel to touch the last whoop, and just the rear did, and it just drove the front down. That's a long ways to fall, and that was right on Blue Groove. You know, the bike followed him straight into the ground. Tough situation to be in. Everybody was talking about that Dragon's Back being pretty critical. With Hunter mentioned it that it was just the whole face of the last whoop that you were taking off on was a big giant cup mark, and you know, he said he was running right next to the tough blocks. And now we're looking at Barsha, 450 main event, already had X amount of laps on it, and they were about halfway through the main event here. So the track was really breaking down, and you know, Justin just caught that last one wrong and spin him off. It was a nasty one for sure.
I hate to see that too, because like, hey, we had him on last week. He was certainly gaining momentum. He had a great opportunity to be on the podium. He was going to be on the podium again. I don't think he was going to catch Eli, but still, just in a great position. And now, you know, we're hearing what he's got a broken collarbone. So assuming that is true, that's what we're hearing from a whole bunch of people. I mean, you got to figure that's at least 6 weeks. If he has surgery, if he has to have it plated, just total speculation here.
Yep. I mean, collarbones, let's face it. Like, I got both of mine plates on them. I think it's the way to go. So I presume he'll be getting surgery on it. He'll be getting it fixed up. I think that's a 4 to 6 week deal. You know, I don't know if we'll see him out at the first couple nationals, which will be a bummer, because don't want to never start a season off, you know, already with minus points. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, I think they'll get it fixed up right. You know, I think he's in a great position. I think that will set him up if he does end up missing the first round of outdoors or second round, you know. You know, a great position for him to come in with no pressure. Obviously, the championship hopes are out of the deal, out of sight at that point. But you know how it is when you come in with no pressure. Sometimes these guys end up riding even better to their ability. So it could be a great outdoor season's coming up for him.
You know what sucks is, like, some people like looking at it as a whole in these seasons, and you prep so long, is that now he was not going to get third in the championship, Supercross championship. His pro motocross championship is pretty much hosed, because he's going to miss several races there. It's going to be hard to gain that back. So this is where I love the SMX format, right? Yeah. So now, and you've talked about this, RV, it gives riders that maybe missed out in the Supercross championship, riders that missed out in the pro motocross championship, to come and take another crack at it. It's a 3-race playoff system. And if he, dude, you cannot count this guy out. So if I'm Justin Barsha, there is still a lot to look forward to, despite the injury at the worst time for the Supercross portion and the pro motocross portion.
I agree 100%. You know, like you said, we've talked about this, having the super motocross with a 3-race series. Justin's definitely going to shine in that, because he's just his mentality. Yep. He's going to be like a pit bull out there, right? And back to that is Cooper, right? Not finishing these last rounds, missing out on the championship for Supercross, but he also has something to look forward to that Super Motocross can give him, that he's still got to keep on it, keep himself honest, keep training, keep riding, and get ready for Super Motocross, because that's another huge platform to be, you know, to be up out there to race, lots of money on the line, not to mention a massive championship also, you know. So two of our main riders right now where this we see the new program, the new format can actually work in, I don't want to say work into their favor, but they'll have a chance to come back and redeem themselves for Super Motocross.
Quad lock question of the week. This is a good one. And it comes from Efrain underscore 103 says, what mindset would you and RV have if you were in Eli's and Chase's position? And ironically, Eli Tomac talks about it after the race. So we're going to roll you some tape and you listen.
I feel like my mind absolutely is at the best it's been for racing. I have to do what I can to manage, you know, and not take unnecessary risk. And I guess at this point, my goal would be podiums. Yep.
Oh yeah. No, I totally agree. I said it's, but here's the thing. I think it's a catch 22. I was thinking about this when we were looking over, when I was reading over the question, and he's doing exactly what I would do. I would, if wins come to you, then Eli's going to take the win. 100%. He's a racer. He's a winner. And he's going to take the win, but he's not going to push for something that isn't necessarily there, or that's a little bit of a stretch because of the points lead he has. But the other thing that I think for in Chase's scenario is that's really good for him coming into outdoors and super motocross is Chase is able to, if he can get these last few wins and win it out, those are huge confidence builders for Chase coming into outdoors, moving into super motocross also. Just because of the scenario, the situation that Eli's in, I would be doing the exact same thing. But also on the flip side, Chase is able to get some more wins, get some, build his more confidence up. So that's kind of the catch 22 is if Chase gets on a roll right now, finishes out this season, gets more confidence, finds what he's missing, then we might see a different Chase for outdoors. And, you know, it's going to be a really good finale.
Yeah, it was a fantastic ride by Chase and some great insight there. I loved hearing what you had to say. And I was thinking after the race, RV, and I'm like doing a rewind of the whole Monster Energy Supercross Championship of all the problems and how much we've heard about Chase not liking his bike and where it struggles. And if there was any track where he could have screwed up, and where that bike wouldn't have worked, I would have thought that Nashville was the track. So it just makes you wonder and scratch your head. Yeah, I know Honda and the whole team's been working hard to get him more comfortable, but dude, that's why it's so incredible. I know I'm jumping all over the place. That's why I really respect what Chase has done. And to your point, winning in situations like this, he can use this and pay it forward, say in the outdoor motocross championship, SMX playoff rounds, and even next year's Supercross, learning to win in these conditions is just going to help him for the next season. But it's crazy how nothing happened on that gnarly track to him.
No, he rode solid, consistent. You know, like I said, Eli, he was able to sneak up on Eli, make the pass. But in, you know, to Eli's point, he's going to be conservative, is not the word. He's going to ride in his means, and he has the points lead to be able to do so. He's put himself in this position, which is the exact position that I would want to be in right now, is be exactly where Eli's at. But like I said, on the flip side, Chase is building some confidence, and we might see a little bit different Chase here coming up if he's able to carry this into outdoors.
You did a great job. Efrain, we appreciate your question. Slide into the DM. You know the plan. Slide into our DM, and then we'll forward you on to Quadlock Case. Quadlock, thank you for doing this. That was a really good question. Hayden Lewis 307, not the winner for the week, but he asked, do you really think Sexton has a shot at coming back? And I'll take this one. Is obviously mathematically he does, but you heard that great soundbite and you heard what RV had to say about where Eli is. I mean, Eli is 31 years old. He's a two-time champ, fixing to be three-time Supercross champion. Unless something crazy happens, there's no shot that Sexton wins this. And trust me, I want everyone to tune in. And it's been a crazy, crazy, crazy year, especially after this last weekend. But I don't, like I said, mathematically he has a chance. But against a guy like Eli Tomac and where he's at in his career, there's no shot. I mean, there's no one could beat you in this situation, RV, so on and so forth. And the reason I'm a flex for RV and I right here, the reason that we know this is because we've been in this situation multiple times, not just for our Supercross championships, but our Pro Motocross championships. When you have multiple championships in both disciplines, you know how to manage that, and you don't have that success by not knowing what the heck you're doing, right, RV?
That's right. No, I know it's you know it's always the first one getting knocking down the very first one is sometimes the hardest in different ways. But being in Eli's position, like you said, is 2-time champ. He's seen just about everything so far in his career, and he's going to ride this thing out. And I'm telling you, if a win presents himself, don't count him out. He's going to get another win this season. If it's right in front of him, if it's in reach, you're not going to see him ride over his head, push the limits to get the win. But if it's there, he's taking it. I can promise
you. No doubt. Boxo USA is doing a little special winter action, and this guy, Real Ones in Action, he's been a listener from the first show, and we did a little trivia on the Title 24 Instagram page about asking about questions and how many race wins and championship wins we have, and here's the answer. If we would have added RV to that question that we talked about with the King of Supercross in the broadcast, the answer is 170 wins, 14 championships. That represents 23% of all SX wins, so almost a quarter of all wins. If you add RV's 41 wins and 4 championships, that brings the total to 211 wins in 18 championships. It's 29% of all premier class SX wins. So Real Ones in Action, guess what, dude? You're the lucky winner of an 8-piece American flag handle screwdriver set from Boxo USA. So we appreciate you being a listener and a viewer of RV and I Title 24. That's awesome. From the first one, dude, we got some loyalty going on here.
That's right, and he must have did some quick math real quick, you know.
That's a lot of damn wins, dude.
It is. It's 29% of what in the last 50 years, right? I think that's what
Yep.
So that's you know, I guess we can pat ourselves on the back. MC, James, myself, you.
Real ones in action. Same for the quad lock winner. Make sure you slide into our DM, and we'll get you all sorted out. That was a wild one. But before we go, thank you, United Motorsports. I saw Ray Butts this weekend and company. They do a fantastic job. Remember, 6 locations throughout Ohio and Kentucky, unitedmotorsports.com, and go in store. They got Boxo USA set up in there as well. You can get you some Boxo tools while you're there. And if you want a promo code, you want 10% off, use Title24. It's site-wide for all of our partners, so you can check them out. UnitedMotorsports.com, QuadLockCase.com, and BoxoUSA.com.
I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. Everyone that is with me now was with me when I was at my lowest of lows, so this is incredible. I can't say I ever dreamed of this as a kid because I didn't know this was possible, so... I'm choked up. This is just surreal. This weekend's been incredible. Perfect day. I just want to celebrate this with everyone I love and care, my whole team, everyone. This is means the world.
Well, this is a very, very special moment here today on Title 24 with RV and I. We got the 250 East Coast Supercross champ, Mr. Hunter Lawrence. And you just heard the sound right there. You've had a couple days to marinate on this, and how does it feel 2 days later, my friend?
Yeah, good. It's Monday now, so it's kind of try to just, you know, work forward, you know, back to normal schedule. But no, we enjoyed it Saturday and Sunday, so it was unreal.
It was a pretty difficult track for sure. And tell us real quick, like what the day was like and what was the biggest struggle with the track, or was it mentally? What was happening there?
Yeah, track was really, it was really funny. I guess they kind of built it when the dirt, you know, was really wet. So it always forms up weird, you know. You have the actual jumps at the top of them are super hard pack, but the lower you get down the face of them, they just get softer and softer. So it was super kicky. You know, you've seen a lot of guys crashing in spots that they don't normally crash in. But the day was pretty cruisy, just a normal day. Didn't change anything, you know. I wanted to just make it a normal day. I wanted to go out and win. But yeah, I think the Dragon's Back was probably the most technical thing, just because of how the berm was and stuff. You didn't really get a good drive out of the berm, and then it was so hard packed up the Dragon's Back that you'd get wheel spin. And then the last one, it was really tough to hit the top of the last Dragon's Back whoop. So everyone was hitting that big cut. So I was blitzing right beside the tough blocks as close as I could, because it was, you know, as fresh as it was there. So that was my kind of line in the main.
Yeah, it was, man, Hunter, just want to say congratulations. You know, I've watched, you know, since you've come over to the States, and obviously, like you mentioned in that interview, some ups and downs, but it was unbelievable to see the success that you've had this year, the consistency. You know, the track looked unbelievably brutal. I mean, I was watching it from on the couch, you know, and not a day that I don't think you'd prefer to have your championship, wrapping your championship up. But do you think it worked into your favor with how technical it was, because you're just so precise on the motorcycle?
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, I don't know. At first, I kind of felt like the track was somewhat not basic, but definitely the conditions did play into it. But I still think it was a little simpler. Obviously, 450s was a different story, because that was just even more beat down. But for us, I kind of think, you know, the whoops weren't as gnarly as what they were in the qualifying session earlier on. So I don't think it was crazy, but I don't know. It could have been worse. It could have been New York last weekend. So, no, I mean, as far as I was stoked. Like, I like that stuff, that it does get technical and ruddy. But, yeah, I don't know. Just kind of, like I said before, just treat it like a normal day. I wasn't really trying to make anything different or change anything, because I was in a pretty fortunate position with how many points I had up. It was kind of a, I don't know. It wasn't really nervous. It was kind of, I had nothing to lose. So just go out and do what I know how to do.
What a feeling right there. I mean, I think with anything in life, whether it's a championship, riding your motorcycle, riding your bicycle, anything you do, I feel for the first time is special. And we're watching some replays from you taking that checkered flag, winning your first championship here in the States. And I just want to go back to your journey of accomplishing this championship, this East Coast Championship, and starting out 2020 and the injuries, and really you're back against the wall and never really getting your feet on the ground. Through that journey, was there ever a moment in time where it started to click? And do you remember, like, going back to the Supercross track thinking, okay, I got it now? And if there was that moment, when was it?
Yeah, I think definitely there was, when I first started in 2019, like, we just had no, you know, we're like, I will figure it out, we'll figure it out. But we're just, you know, not getting fed the right information, being stubborn, and then just, like, we weren't experienced in it, you know, and you learn the hard way. And yeah, there was times where you go onto the track and all you're thinking about is a section, all you're thinking about is a gnarly whoop section that you're going to ride. So you're already, you know, I think that, when we started working with Osho, it was really kind of when it started to go. Obviously, 2020, I was super, just my body wasn't healthy. We had a lot of issues, injuries on top of that. And it was just like, it was just fire on fire, you know, just beating me down. And then from 21 onwards, it started to click. And it was 21 that it really was like, no, when I come to the track, I feel really confident. I think where it really clicked, the whole piece of the puzzle clicked, was last year after the Anaheim 3 crash in the whoops. After that, what we then went on to fix after that, I feel like that's when it really clicked to the point where I just felt, I don't want to say like immortal on the supercross track, but like just felt like I couldn't mess it up, you know, as far as in a main event when I'm switched on and stuff. Like I was so solid in the whoops. I could recover in the whoops better than ever. And since then I haven't ever crashed in the whoops, touch wood, you know, and it's just due to the stuff we've worked on. So that's kind of where it's at. I remember the days of when it started. It wasn't as fun or easy.
Yeah, no, it can be a big learning curve, you know. Like I never experienced what you guys went through, but I had a short stint of going somewhere that was so unfamiliar to me, which was going over to Europe for a couple months, and how steep the learning curve was for me. It wasn't really that enjoyable. And I didn't stick it out like you guys have here. So I got on the plane and flew back home. it's an undertaking to be in your guys' position and especially yours, you know, coming from some injuries and where you guys have come from. It's just amazing to see, you know, both of you guys, you know, be able to succeed here and do it in probably some of the best fashion that I think I've seen, you know, like great with interviews, always got the snazzy gear. You know, I was really thought your whole setup this weekend was pretty mint, you know, between the collab with Gibson guitar.
Yes, Gibson,
you know, pretty sick. You know, you guys are definitely changing the sport and changing it in a good way. You know, I think we need more of that.
Thank you. Yeah. It's this weekend was incredible. I think it's cool. You know, the more we can do stuff like that, because man, you know, as you guys would know, the world now from what it was when you guys were, you know, doing it in your prime, how much it's changing and how much, like, even I see it's changing. Like, it's crazy sort of to try and continue to push it and stuff. And it is cool because, I mean, it would be unreal to have it, you know, as mainstream or as big as NFL, even the Formula One and MotoGP is, you know, that would be incredible because what we do is amazing. But yeah, like what you said when you started that, the unfamiliar territories of coming over, and you know, our personality is when someone would give us advice, you know, we're not just going to be like, yeah, whatever, mate. Like, especially in a field that we're not experienced in, you know. So anyone that was giving us advice, we were just taking it on board. And sometimes it was the wrong advice, sometimes it was the right advice, but we weren't experienced enough to decipher it and go, yeah, this is good, or like try it and see, you know. Because we were obviously starting from pretty much scratch. So it was tough. And a lot of them, and stuff like Supercross, there's no room for error. The error, when you'd figure something out, if it worked or didn't, sometimes it would work. And if it didn't, you know, sometimes you'd end up on your head. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hunter, personally, it's obviously, it's an incredible accomplishment to become a 250 Supercross champion here in the States. But outside of your personal accomplishment and how good that feels, and you made it happen, you did an incredible job. Tell us what it means to you to accomplish that for your family, knowing everything that your family has gone through and sacrificed. Was there an element there that you're just as happy for your family as you are for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why everyone was so emotional, because it was like, I don't know, it's kind of weird. It feels like it was the somewhat like the completion of, you know, obviously Jets got some titles, and it was kind of me catching up. And then it's kind of like, it feels like, okay, like it's complete. Like we've done it, even though it's only a stepping stone to the ultimate goal, you know, but it's like a big stepping stone, you know. No, just looking back, it was like so far out of reach. And when you're younger and you don't know your own limits and your own, you know, capabilities and stuff, it seems even further away. So it's cool. Like a 450 championship seems, or like being successful in the 450s, without sounding cocky, it seems closer in reach than what the 251 did from where we come from, because we're here now. We know the system of things, obviously, with Osho, like we're familiar, we're comfortable with it. Whereas beforehand, we're like, dude, like we don't even know how to hit whoops, you know? So within reason, the 450 goal seems closer than where we started and the 250 goal was, you know, of the stepping stone, if that makes any sense without coming across, you know, cocky or anything.
No. Yeah, absolutely. It makes complete sense.
Yeah, I feel like you guys, you know, to your point is you have a good foundation now. You know how everything works over here. You've seen the different tracks. You've seen the different conditions. I have to ask, who's got the bragging rights now? You know, like I think between you and Jet, you know, like it's coming. I know you guys have the rivalry here. We have Jet, you know, watching you do your last lap coming in, you know.
Yeah.
I have a brother. My brother raced, never been in this position, but I can tell you that there's something special about, you know, having two brothers out there that are just absolutely dominating Supercross. And then winning, you know, knock on wood, we're gonna watch Jet wrap up this next weekend, and then you just wrapping up this one. It's pretty amazing to see you guys got to be on cloud nine, just everybody as a team, a whole, the family, where you've come from. I mean, you know, this the story is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's unreal. Jet's obviously got the bragging rights.
I don't know about that.
You're pretty sporty, dude. You're close.
For sure, but this is my first title, and he's you know, knock on wood, like you said, going for number four this year. So can't say I have the bragging rights. I mean, this season's been unreal. Everyone's path is different, but at the end of the day, it's you know, you see the raw emotion. Like, you can't fake our emotions that, you know, the cameras were there, obviously. It's not a show. Like, that's just genuine. We want each other to be as successful as, you know, as each other, but at the end of the day, and you know, who knows, in 10 years, we might have a podcast like you boys do now and sit back and it's cool to look back and go, hey, he got this many titles, or whoever got the most titles or whatever. I think the important thing is to, like you said, hey, we both dominated the sport. I think that has a somewhat bigger impact, rather than, you know, if a few years ago I had to just throw it through the towel and, you know, and then Jet just went on to do it. I think it's going to be a little more special for the story and makes it all that much sweeter.
You think with the pressure off from the championship that your golf game's going to be a lot more enjoyable this week or what?
Yeah, I definitely want to make an effort to get out. It's kind of a bad, maybe it's a downfall of my personality, but I'm kind of somewhat switched over to outdoors already. You know, that's another big goal I want to hit. Like I said, it's 250 East Coast and West Coast, they're stepping stones, they're milestones and boxes you got to tick to go towards the 450s. You know, there's been a lot of guys that have won these titles, you know, and not gone on to be as successful in the 450 class. So we want to really make sure that we stay on target and not get caught up in just, you know, one series.
Hey, after party, whose is going to be best? I personally think you're older, so your after party is going to be better. I feel like Jets is going to be more of a Nickelodeon scene.
Mine. I'm not a massive party guy, so we just kind of had a mellow thing with all the people from the team and just friends and family, kind of hanging out. They're all having a drink. I don't drink, but just kind of cool to kick back and have a relaxed good evening with them. But mine was unreal. Like I said, it was kind of a big deal, because it was like the final piece to the 250 class dream for our family. And everyone knows the journey and the struggles we've been through. So who knows? Who knows what Myrtle's got planned for Jet this weekend? I'm sure it's going to be good. That's the fourth one. I'm sure it's going to be good. Who knows? We might have some TikTok influencers show up. It might just be a big TikTok fest. If that's the case, I'm out. I'm bouncing.
Hey, Hunter, I got one more question for you. How do you, I was never one that could juggle my racing and my off the motorcycle, you know, activities. Like you, I know you guys play a lot of golf. I think yeah. that how do you juggle? I mean, from your standpoint, like I could only do one thing. I was 100% committed to one thing, and that was racing. Yeah. So as for going out on the boat or going golfing or giving myself that release, that even though I knew I needed it, I couldn't do it because I'd be hung over, not from drinking, but just hung over on Monday, Tuesday when I had to go back and train. What is, yeah. how do you guys, I mean, I see you and Hunter or you and Jet, you know, like, and you guys do a really good job at keeping it fun. And when you need to put your work in, you guys are 100% committed, but when you're yeah. also 100% committed of giving yourself the time you need of that stress release.
Yeah. So yeah, like anything, it's a good balance. We're not putting that stuff first. Like obviously racing comes first, and in the winter time, it's obviously a little easier being in Florida. It gets so hot in the summer, so we don't really ever do that stuff. I'm the same way. Like if it's an off weekend during the nationals, like I'm not trying to go out and just drain myself in the heat, because I'm the same way. Like it catches up, you know, kind of burning the candle a little, yeah, a little much, just with how hot and humid it is. So in the winter, it's a little more, I wouldn't say loose, but we have a little more time in the afternoons.
It's
after
a little more
training.
Doable.
Yeah. It's more enjoyable. You don't beat your body down. It's, you know, it's cooler. We can go play nine holes and play a bit of golf, but that's kind of like, yeah, all I really do is train. And then if I have a bit of spare time, I'm either doing some stuff on my cars or something related to that, or I'll get out and play a bit of golf. And the golf is, it's kind of that release, you know, same thing as like music, how I view music and stuff. It's just a release to kind of switch off, kind of go brain numb, you know, just, I'm mind numbing and I'm just focusing on one thing. I'm just hitting a white ball with a stick, essentially. And it's funny because it's so, when I tell people we love golf, they're like, oh, but like supercross and motocross are so fast and extreme. How do you enjoy golf? It's so slow. And I'm like, because it's exactly that, you know. It's just slow. You're in the middle of nowhere. There's no phones. There's no technology stuff around you. It's just you and, you know, some good boys and good banter, bit of smack talk. And it's just, you know, that's unreal.
Yeah, that's good. Good to
yeah,
know.
That's great, mate. Well, again, congratulations on an absolutely incredible season. It's well-deserved. You turned that ship around from 2020. Thank you for sharing the stories as well. Congratulations to your whole inner team as well. And again, becoming a 250 East Coast Supercross champion. You worked hard for it. You deserve it. You made it happen. And of course, thanks for coming on Title 24. We appreciate you. Can't wait to see you guys battle it out. I'm sure Salt Lake City is going to be a lot of fun at the showdown. And go out with a bang, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you, boys, for having me. Appreciate it. We'll chat soon.
Man, RV, that was great to have a convo with the champ, and always love talking to them and just how lighthearted they are. It's feel good, you know?
Yeah, they do a really good job at, you know, as we were just talking, the juggling. My last question was, how do you separate yourself from the racing on the weekends and the training during the week? And then, you know, the times that they have off that they completely, you know, unplug from it. And, you know, it's great to be able to see that they're able to have a life outside of racing. You know, I don't know if I had much of one. We were just speaking about that. I don't know if you had much of one either. It's definitely something hard to juggle, you know, with the racing and also your off the motorcycle, life that ultimately will have you enjoy your career or your work more. Right. So
I think it would have helped us. I think it would have helped us race longer myself personally. And I don't know if it's just a different time that we live in. I mean, you and I, it was like eat, sleep, breathe, moto, didn't have time to go play golf. Didn't have time to go on the boat. I mean, we had time, but we didn't do it. Cause to your point, yeah, there was a hangover, and you explained it perfectly, not a hangover from drinking, but you know, you needed that downtime to recover from the next weekend. And I think that's how they're able, like I said, I think because they have so much fun and there's obviously a lot of pressure, but I feel that they keep it lighthearted, and not just those two guys. Most of the industry does now. I'm jealous a little bit. I wish we could have done the same.
I agree. I've said this in the past, that watching these guys win today, and then also be able to, like I said, completely unplug and have that, that downtime. It was just something that I couldn't do, wasn't taught how to do. But I definitely love to see it, because it definitely is prolonging these guys' career. I think if we could have done it, like you said, it would have made a race longer. And it wasn't that I was plugged into moto because I loved it so much. It was just, that's all I knew. I didn't know how to unplug. So it's great to see these guys learning and evolving, to get the best out of their career, because I think we could have been maybe even better if we would have been able to learn to unplug.
Yeah, certainly. It was good to hear it from Hunter's standpoint as well, of how they managed that. And you brought up a good point. I think it's great for them and the branding wise. I mean, I don't know, maybe there's an element there that because of social media, it's made it a little bit easier to show that personality and how the industry's changed. Maybe that's mm-hmm. one reason we weren't that way. I know we were taught to go out there and win, and winning was everything. I'm sure they're taught that winning is everything also, but nevertheless, it was cool to share that with Hunter.
Yeah, totally.
I hope that Denver doesn't claim as many victims as Nashville did, RV, because we don't need that.
No, we don't need that. We need these guys to stay healthy so we can, they got only it's 2 weekends off before the first national. So, mm-hmm. These guys got to go straight from the locker rooms at the stadiums to straight into, prep for outdoors, 35 minute motos, moving on. So it's we need these guys to be healthy. We're coming up to Colorado and Utah, both races at altitude. Once again, we're just talking about Eli. If the win is there, I mean, you got to give him the upper hand right now, with being that he's from Cortez, Colorado, grew up in the altitude. I think he's going to shine there. I think that's in his element. Let's put it that way.
It's going to be interesting. We got some info for you guys to tune in right there. You can see it Thursday, SMX Insider, Jason Wygant, Daniel Blair on YouTube. It's going to be good. Saturday race day live starts at 3:30 PM Eastern, round 16 from Denver, 9 PM at Peacock. You won't want to miss SMX Insider show, post show as well. That's 2 AM on the YouTubes. And then, Sunday, I know I'm going to be tuned into this one. Love MotoGP, or pardon me, World Superbike, but it's at Catalunya round. It's going to be on CNBC, and that's 2 p.m. Eastern. Reason I was thinking it was MotoGP, because that's where I went and watched MotoGP a few years back. But nevertheless, always motorsports on NBC is bringing the action. If you guys didn't tune in to the IndyCar broadcast, that was a hell of a race. You missed a good one, so I'm sure you can rewind that on demand on Peacock. But you can also watch us on demand on Peacock and Motorsports on YouTube, Motorsports on NBC YouTube page. You can check us out there. So we appreciate your loyalty, your listeners. Make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcast sites. We're on there. We appreciate everyone. It was a wild weekend, RV. And like I said, I hope Denver doesn't claim as many victims, but that's why we go watch these races, and that's why the guys race, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's going to be a great finale. We've got two to go, and let's see. Got Jet coming back in to hopefully wrap up his championship, and we kind of know what's going on with Eli. We kind of can see that coming, but it is motocross, it is supercross. Anything can happen, so we got to just tune in and see what's in store for us.
That's right. Thanks again, United Motorsports, Boxo USA, and of course, Quadlock. We appreciate it. Everyone, all of our viewers, listeners, make sure you subscribe, like, keep sending those questions. We'll get to as many as we can throughout the week. Check our Ryan Villapoto's Instagram page, my Instagram page, and of course, Title 24's Instagram page. Get on Peacock, watch some old Title 24's on demand if you've missed any. Like I said, and the podcast as well. So thank you very much for listening and watching, and we'll see you next week.